This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Ballow joins me on the program. He is a professor of history in the Corcoran Department of History at the University of Virginia and director of the Fellowships Program at Governing America in a Global Era at the University of Virginia's Miller Center of Public Affairs. His third book is A Government Out of Sight, The Mystery of National Authority in 19th Century America. He is also one of the Backstory History Guys online at backstoryradio.org. Brian, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Coy.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. We want to talk about a recent program that you did about the history of the U.S. Census, which followed this amazing thing from the 18th century through the 19th and into the 20th and ultimately up to today. Just a terrific program. And let's begin by listening to a clip of the program that was broadcast just a few weeks ago.
Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within this union according to their respective numbers.
This, of course, is the section of the U.S. Constitution that established the House of Representatives. And though it may sound ho-hum to you now, the idea of basing a system of government on an actual nose count was utterly groundbreaking back in 1787.
Unfortunately, the common association with the census was all negative.
That's Michael Quinn, the director of Montpelier, James Madison's historic home here in Central Virginia. James Madison, you will remember, was our fourth president, but he was also the main author of the Constitution.
Why would government want to count people? Well, usually there are two reasons. They either want to take more of their wealth, so they want to find out who you are and where you live, or else they want to draft people for an army, which means they're going to conscript your young men.
In 1787, conscripting young men wasn't really at the top of the founders' to-do list, but taking people's wealth, well, it's fair to say it was. They were keenly aware that if the young nation was going to survive, the central government would need to figure out a way to fund itself. The genius of Article I was that by tying both taxation and representation to that nose count, it assured that citizens wouldn't try to shirk their fiscal responsibilities by laying low when the nose counter came around. They had an incentive to stand up and be counted.
And that is classic Madisonian thinking. You know, Madison again and again said you should never trust anyone. Now, at the same time, he never gave up. What he realized the need for was to have counterbalancing forces, motivations.
Well, if you think that's good, it gets better. Because not only did the founders create a legislative body that would truly reflect the shape of its constituency, they also made sure that it would continue to do so on into the future.
The actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of the Congress of the United States, and within every subsequent term of 10 years, in such manner as they shall by law direct.
They recognize.
That's a clip from the Backstory Radio's program about the history of the U.S. Census. And Brian Ballow, professor of history, is also one of the American History Guys. He joins me live in studio. It is an amazing story, this counting people. I'm reminded of the fact that when William the Conqueror came over from Normandy and conquered England and took over for the Anglo-Saxons who had come in from Germany, one of the first things he did is this historic doomsday book where he goes around and counts people and finds out how much money they have because he wants some of it. And
yes.
This was...
Fortunately, he did not become known as William the Counter.
Right. So
sounds a lot less intimidating, doesn't it?
This is a totally revolutionary idea, right? I mean, this is the way they did it in America. And talk about the purpose of this thing and what they were after.
Well, what was innovative about it? Governments had counted people forever. But what was innovative about the way the Americans did it was building in the assumption that there would be expansion. So doing this every 10 years and then reapportioning representation based on that. And I know you're a politics junkie, Coy, and so we did this show because, you know, the census has just come out and people are looking at the headlines, you know, how many people we are, that kind of thing. But where the sausage is really going to get made is how these numbers are used to redraw boundaries when states pick up an extra seat in the House of Representatives or when they lose a seat. And as you know, that trickles all the way down to state and local politics. Those numbers are used for redesigning all kinds.
It's exactly what they're doing literally right now in the city of Charlottesville. They are redrawing the voting districts for Charlottesville, and they're having to add one. There'll be a new one this year.
So one very innovative aspect of this was this notion that things are always going to be changing. The other was counting everybody. Okay? So we know, you know, you're a good historian. So you know that back when the first census was done, only white men, in fact, only white men with some property, sometimes quite a bit of property, depending on what state they lived in, could vote. So for voting purposes, the population was really quite small, but it was really quite radical to count everybody, women, children, and in the case of enslaved individuals, counting them 3/5, which of course is hardwired into the Constitution.
Yeah.
But we're still counting them.
We're talking with Brian Ballow, one of the American history guys at Backstory Radio. You can get the complete schedule of Backstory Radio broadcasts and listen to past stories online. The podcasts are right there at backstoryradio.org. Yeah.
And I just, you know, say to your listeners whose eyes are glazing over, first of all, if your eyes are glazing over, pull over. It's not good to drive if your eyes are glazing over. But we had the same reaction to doing this show. No one's going to care about a show about the census. And then our producer, Tony Field, such a smart guy, he found an episode of The West Wing, which is all about the census. And that's how our show opens. It opens with the press secretary character saying, "Help me out here." I can't remember the character, Sam or the wonky guy.
Yeah.
Help me out. A little over my head, you know, I've been talking about the census. He said, "Yeah, you've been talking about the census for 2 weeks." He said, "Yeah, I got to tell you, I really have no idea what's going on. I just thought it was going to be so boring. But now that I'm really looking at this stuff, you know, this census stuff is really pretty important."
Yeah. Brian, how was it actually enacted? I mean, did they have people walking around colonial America knocking on doors?
Yeah. Yeah. They went, you know, door to door. But again, this is what some would call the genius of America. And that clip you played, this Madisonian idea of making it in people's interest to answer their door, right? And why was it in their interest? Well, back in the 18th and the 19th century, was their interest because if they weren't counted, then they might lose representation. Okay, and what came along with representation? Well, obviously political jobs, and along with political jobs came contracts, that kind of thing. Today, it's in people's interests, and the reason that cities make huge efforts to make sure people fill out the census form is all kinds of federal grants turn on population data. All kinds of, it's something like $400 billion as measured a few years ago, depends on the not just the population of your state, but the income of that population, where they live, all of that. That all is keyed into the census these days in terms of how the federal government distributes money. So there's a lot of money riding on this.
Yeah. Let's rejoin our conversation with Brian Ballow. He's one of the American history guys at Backstory Radio, backstoryradio.org. We're talking about the history of the U.S. Census, and you can listen to the complete program that Backstory did about the history of the U.S. Census online, backstoryradio.org. Did they have all the categories at the very beginning, or were they just counting people and income? Or when did they start putting in these categories, skin color and where people were from?
Yeah, the only, of course, where people were you mean original country of origin. No, that comes later. Obviously, they cared about where people were living. That's what the whole census was about, so that they could reapportion the house. The one category that has remained consistent throughout the census is race. So they asked about African Americans, blacks, from the very beginning of the census. But the multiple categories, for the most part, are a development in the 20th century with some important exceptions. In, I think it's the 1840, it's maybe the 1850 census, they begin to ask about mulattoes because there are some Southerners in particular who are very worried about the intermingling of the races, and they want to begin to measure those who we would call biracial today. And that's one of the first new categories that is added. It's not until the 1870s that they begin to count Indians, because Indians were not considered to be citizens up to that point. They had their own sovereign territories. They were living in the country, but they were not counted in the census. And then they begin to count what you asked about, people of the countries of origin. For lots of people at the end of the 19th century. In the 20th century, we get this proliferation of categories. So the most important of new one is Hispanics, which is tested in the 1970s but becomes a regular part of the census in 1980. And it was based on people from Spanish-speaking countries.
It's really interesting because it's not a race, but they add this in here into the categories along with it as if it is a race.
Right. And, you know, if you look at the long history of this, Coy, what's fascinating to me is there was kind of a stigma in terms of being singled out. There certainly was a stigma attached to being black. It was associated very closely with slavery. Of course, there were free blacks before the Civil War, but it was in general considered to be a bit of a stigma. By the 20th century, you have racial groups and groups from different countries actually lobbying to get counted separately. So it's a real indication of just how far pluralism had come.
And if there's anything
by the
20th century, the history shows us is that that's always changing. With the census itself, those categories are very fluid and changing.
Absolutely. You know, I always learn, I learn a lot. The other history guys would tell you I learn all my history from our radio show. That's not entirely true, but I do always learn a lot. And what struck me when we worked on this show is that, in fact, we think of the results of the census as being a snapshot of our country, and that's what the Census Bureau calls it. But actually, if you look at the questions that are asked, that in many ways is a better snapshot than the answers. For instance, I guess in retrospect, it's no surprise that during the Great Depression, we get the first set of questions about housing conditions when something like 25% of Americans are unemployed. The number of questions balloons from 30 questions to something like 60 questions or so. And a lot of them really have to do with sanitary conditions, housing conditions, the kinds of things that people were experiencing in record numbers. Because
and the kind
of thing
a government
Depression.
Policymakers would want to know if they were going to enact any policies that might help people or provide remedy to some of those challenges.
And when you have a more active government like we did. In the case of the New Deal, exactly. So, just looking at the questions asked really tells you a lot.
Yeah, that is fascinating.
You asked right at the top of the show, well, how did they do this? They went door-to-door, and they still go door-to-door for people who don't mail in the census. But beginning the last third of the 20th century, they went to the U.S. mail, leave it to our government to begin using the mail just about the time that the internet is being developed. but at any rate, we got to the U.S. mail, and that is how we do it today. And most people get what's known as a short form. That's probably – did you fill out your census?
I did fill out my short form, but we only got a couple minutes left. But I'm curious, tell me about the pushback. And, you know, in the most recent census, there was a lot of criticism, especially coming from conservatives in America, that the long form census was a type of socialism. It was overreach. It was big government.
Yeah. And the long form does ask a lot of questions. I mean, the irony is if you had to identify the interest groups behind that long form, they would be big business, big commerce, many of the interest groups that are generally associated with conservatives in today's politics. These are used by all kinds of marketing firms in order to send you all that junk mail that you get. This is the lifeblood in many ways of commerce, although a lot of that, and here's the other point, a lot of that is now changing to data that people can get through the internet, through barcodes, things that we voluntarily give up to our gas stations and our supermarkets every day. But somehow when the government asks for, we say, oh, no, we don't want the government to have that. So it's a very interesting phenomenon to me, how freely we give our information to people we know nothing about. But when these civil servants, public officials ask for information that they really guard pretty carefully, we say, no.
It's the end of the world,
And as you learn from history, there is reason to be concerned from time to time. These data were used to identify American citizens of Japanese ancestry during World War II to help place them in internment camps. There have been abuses of census data, or what we would call abuses today.
Brian Ballow is one of the American History Guys with Backstory Radio. Check him out online at backstoryradio.org, and you can listen there to the podcast of this complete program that they did about the history of the U.S. Census. Brian, thank you so much for being here. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Coy. And what is your Social Security number?
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.